Good evening and welcome to another episode of Citizen Kane. It is the 29th of January, 2017, and we are streaming live on YouTube right now. We do stream live every Sunday night between 7 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can always find the links to those live stream events on our webpage, citizenkane.org, as well as the Facebook page. If you are watching the live stream edition and you would like to call in and join the conversation, bring your opinion to the table, tell us where we're wrong and where we're right, or maybe some of the above, call that number down below, 267-521-2771. Of course, you can always Skype. Citizen Kane is the handle. And, of course, you can always get a hold of me anytime during the week. That email address is show@citizenkane.org. My name is Conan Solidy, and I am joined by the almost sick, getting sick. She's on her way, Shauna Nash. You're all right. You always say you're getting sick.
Because I am always getting sick.
No, you're...
I work in an office full of people who will...
Are always hacking and smacking.
Always hacking and smacking and snocking and would rather die than admit that they are weak enough to have to not be at work.
I'm used to people in my line of business who just truck on through and they bring their sickness with them. And they say that's a big no-no. You're not supposed to do that. There are certain sicknesses where you just need to, you know, stay home. Don't bring that nonsense to the workplace because you're going to get everyone else infected. And I've always been of the opinion of once you're sick, you've already been sick for a couple of days and you've been touching everything at work anyways. So everyone's going to get it anyways. It's inevitable.
Yep. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not like food work directly where it's like, you know, you really have to leave because customers are getting grossed out by you.
Yep.
But it's a no-win situation. You're not supposed to show up when you're sick, but...
That was late.
What you're also not supposed to do is communicate the disease to other people, and that happens before you know that you're sick.
I've
taken time off from work the day before. Because I've known, like, okay, if I don't just stay home and rest tomorrow, I'm going to be a lot worse off. But I had a job that really didn't matter if I was there or set the place on fire or not. So it didn't really matter. But
well, I find if I just start hearing about other people getting sick, then I'll just start feeling a little nauseous myself.
It's all day. It's about 8 hours of listening to people sneeze and cough and clear their throats and just spew the germs everywhere. And, you know, it's ventilation. Oh, horrible, horrible conditions. I don't know how I do it.
You're just a good old slave. Good work. Good work on you. So, I guess we'll get on with the show. I saw this earlier this week. I thought it was interesting. The Sentinel reports, actually it was a U-Haul report that the Sentinel picked up on. The Sentinel. Keene becomes a one-way destination, U-Haul says. In 2016, Keene saw a jump in the number of U-Haul trucks that arrived in the city as a one-way destination. U-Haul International Incorporated listed Keene Tuesday as its number 25 among its top 25 U.S. growth cities for locations with a population between 10,000 and 50,000. I think we're about at... we're going to find out in a second.
No, like 15, I think?
No, we're at 20-something.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to pull those numbers up in a second. The rankings are calculated by looking at the net gain of arriving U-Haul one-way trucks over departing one-way U-Haul trucks for the calendar year, the company said in a news release. In 2016, Keene had a 7% increase in one-way truck arrivals, while departures of one-way rentals dropped 1%, according to the company. Of the one-way rental customers that did business in Keene, 53.6% of them arrived in the city as opposed to left. The company did not, however, release raw data on the actual numbers of trucks that were dropped off or rented in Keene.
So it's not a study, it's a press release.
Yeah.
It's just slightly different. Not hating on U-Haul.
So 7% increase, and I've heard speculation. People coming up with their own ideas as to why there was a 7% increase. As far as the actual population of Keene is concerned, I've got some statistics up to 2013. And they're right here. Nope, right here.
Well, what I don't understand about it is increase over what? Year over year?
From 2015? From one way drop-offs.
So 6-7% more
one-way drop-offs
came in than left.
Correct. Now, we are a college town, and you have to consider that you've got you mentioned that you had collegers coming in with a bunch of stuff.
Well, the parents bring it,
and then when they finish up, they throw their stuff in the dumpster, or they hand it off to the to a friend. They probably hand it off to a new roommate.
They can't afford a U-Haul truck. Mommy and Daddy can afford the U-Haul truck because their precious little thing to be in training they need to take care of it.
Good point. And we've seen some of this junk after 4 years. It's pretty tore up. They might decide that it's not even worth renting a truck to take it back. They probably also purchased a car while they were here,
or they can't even afford to move.
To stay here?
I've looked at the costs. It's pricey getting out of here just as it's pricey getting in here. So,
well, here are the stats. Up to 2013, the population then was 23,419. Now, I did hear something recently. I always believed that the student population in Keene was about between 3,000 and 5,000 kids. All right. And I was of the opinion that that number was not a part of the 23,000 that I've been quoting forever and ever. I heard differently from city employees that, yes, in fact, that 23,000 does include collegers. Exactly. Let me pull that number back up again.
Yeah, so, they do mention that the college, which is sadly the lifeblood of most of the economy these days, mm-hmm. is a factor in why there are more coming in than leaving.
As far as population growth is concerned, 2012, there's only about a dozen. There was a dozen less in 2012 than in 2013, and in 2011 it was about the same as 2013. There's a big dip in 2009 where it's dropped almost about 100. So
you mean it's gone up year over year?
So it is going up.
So there isn't
very, very slowly. I don't know if that is part of the 7% or not.
Well, those are different numbers. And we, as the person who wrote the article said, they don't have the raw data that U-Haul provided. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if it's year over year. If in 2015 there were 20% more leaving than coming in or something like that. Or, you know, if just less people at all are coming in.
And we also have surrounding towns. People come to work in Keene. However, they go live in West Berlin or Chesterfield or whatnot. And that just happens to be, guess where? U-Haul is centered in Keene. That's where you drop it off at.
It's in Keene and the whole area, yeah.
Yep. So very interesting, I thought, anyways. I don't notice any population increase, except that, hey, they're building a lot of new buildings. You've got West Street Park or Manor or whatever it's called these days.
I don't know.
They're adding 130 units. You got the center of Keene, or the Colony Mill that's going to be turned into units.
Okay, yeah.
Someone has done the math and decided that that we need more units than we actually have, even though the population isn't really growing. I put this at the end of the show, but I guess
incentives for people to come here, then yeah, we can't all buy a house, you know, on Bradford Road or something.
Well, segue into an editorial from 2 weeks ago now. John McGauley over at the Sentinel writes some pretty insightful articles, a lot of he questions a lot of how the system is, you know, currently works. And I think he nailed it on this one. He has termed it I don't know if this has ever been used before, but he termed Keene the new meta city, as in medical city. And well, it makes a lot of sense. So we've got baby boomers; they're all retiring. A lot of these guys did exactly what a lot of young couples and individuals do when they're younger. Of course, they go buy property out in the woods and they truck into the city to do their business or to work. It gets hard to take care of oneself when you're out in the boonies.
Mm-hmm.
Away from the hospital, away from your visits that you have to, your daily visits that you have to do more and more. And if anything ever happens, it's kind of good to be where the EMT can actually get to you, smartly. So yeah, all these units that I just mentioned might be, in preparation for the new wave of oldsters. Who have decided that their house is too big out in the boonies. It's too big. They can't manage it. They're too far away from the amenities that they need. And they need somewhere that's decent because they don't want to live in some 200-year-old home in downtown. They actually want a decent apartment with other oldsters who they... So, you know,
by the time you're an oldster... you don't have the energy to refab a 200-year-old home that has steps that are, you know, a foot high.
I agree.
Without any, you know, if you can't actually get up the steps to your home, why not just move into an apartment? You could, you know, maybe sue for ADA or something.
I would say they probably lack the desire to do so. Fixing up old homes can be sometimes just as costly as building a brand new one.
Yeah.
So I think that Magali nailed this one, in that Keene is going to become a meta city where health care is a commodity in the U.S. And my only fear is that when the population switches over so dramatically, is there going to be enough workers to provide all this care?
You mean enough workers to take care of the older people?
Correct. All these services. So you have, you know, it's going to be this. You already know it's going to be a drain.
Well, it's going to be more expensive, or they will lower the standards so that the price can go down and the pool of labor can go up.
Mm-hmm. You think that's going to happen?
That's going to result in people dying, but whatever.
Dying in the hospital corridors or out in the streets?
No, if you lower the standards for entry, then you're going to get lower quality of entrance.
How about the retirement age?
I don't really care about the retirement age. I'm saying if you increase the labor pool, then you can lower the standard for the quality of the entrance. So you could see a decline in... The quality of care. I mean, it's it's palliative care that this economy is going to be running on. Not really, you know, the bone broke. How do I set the bone or something? It's not, you know, a kid fell the wrong way off the bike and his teeth got knocked out. And how do you, you know, put it back together? It's going to be this person is 89 years old or 104 and they are slowly, slowly dying. And, you know, how do you take care of that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of this, he really has a good grasp of reality.
Well, it's
like there was stuff I was reading in here that I didn't like at all. Whose fault is that? And he still seemed to have a very clear grasp on how the world really is as opposed to how he... Or I certainly would want it to be.
Well, as far as Social Security and Medicare are concerned, this is something that I've been railing about for forever. Because Shauna and I aren't going to get any of it.
We aren't.
We are not. We've been paying into it.
It's not going to be.
Yeah, I'm paying a lot less into it right now than I was in previous years. Shauna's still paying pretty much full swing. And
that's what you do when you put yourself out into the world and under the jurisdiction.
It is not going to be available.
And
they're going to start bringing down the actual care, the quality. It's going to start coming down.
Retirement rates are going to go up. Maybe the quality will go up because they'll pay nurses or RNs or doctors. You know, I don't know the terminology of people who work in that industry. Maybe they'll pay them more, and that will create a boom again towards nursing. When I was in college,
yeah, but where does the money come from to pay them more?
I don't know.
A lot of these individuals are in a fixed system where they don't have any more to pay, and the money's going to run out.
I don't know. I mean, you can lower the quality of entrance, or you can invest in more workers of the same quality. I mean, I do want to point out that he also pointed out the reality of, well, not the reality, but the tendency of people being scattered and atomized and not being families, he points out that your kids live in California and North Carolina, which is where a lot of people out here go.
You think it'll be a bringing back of family to?
No.
You don't think it'll happen?
Not for the boomers, no.
If there was a collapse, do you think that families would have a tendency to stay together out of necessity to take care of each other?
If they're already split and the collapse happens, they will all die separately.
Any
families that survive and are together, I guess they will stay together, I guess. I mean, right now, it's, you know, the point is made that people are scattered all across the country. And people don't go back home to live with their parents to take care of them, or their parents are not invited to move to California or North Carolina to live with their children or whatever. So and I would not do that with my parents, any of them.
Long as we're talking about this, Mom and Dad, you're welcome to come stay with us.
I'm cool with your parents.
We're gonna have to build on to the house, though. We're gonna have to build an addition.
Yeah, no, your parents are fine, but they actually raised you and took care of you. And, you know, fractalize that across the entire country, and you have a lot of, I mean, I think after this generation, like the Gen Xers, when they get really old and start to pop off, and, you know, I think their children will be more inclined to look after them. On a large scale. I mean, on a mass generalizing statistical scale, you know, you're great. You right there watching, who's a baby boomer and your kids love you. That's all great. Not talking about you. You know, but there's a lot who aren't. So
I'm actually thinking that Generation Z, the snowflakes, I think that they'll probably be the generation who actually do stay with their folks. They're already doing it. They're already staying with their folks till they're 30. So, I mean, they're already halfway there.
Well, that,
living in the basement.
That could be.
And of course, some of the
move in with them when they eventually ever do get their own place. I mean, it's not really that shameful of an idea.
No,
it's
only it's a very new thing in the human culture, and it's really an American thing.
I think it's a creation of the teenager thing from the 50s. Where you're supposed to get out and be atom, not an individual, but an atomized, you know, an atom in the world, and create your own life.
I would say that
especially with the freeing of the women and liberating them. That's, you know, I have heard stories, you know, where it was like, if you had your daughter just run off just because she turned 18 and graduated high school, like, what kind of person are you? She's out by herself. You know, she has to work so much more and focus on a career instead of, you know, focus on.
Well, now if she gets
any,
you know,
other choices,
if she gets knocked up or she can't find some help to support the family, you've always got Big Daddy government to rely on. There's where it really comes to fruition right there. It's,
that's what you tell her to do, then I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't tell them to do that. I say that it's an opportunity. You got them food stamps. You got that Section 8 housing. Take care of you. Well, this is something to watch out for. Very interesting. I would say that back to the kids leaving and not coming back, I think that's a normal occurrence where the teenagers need to get out and need to get it out of their system, except when you had the American dream so readily available, you didn't have to come back. You figured it out. You got the car, you got a job, and you got your own place, and then it's lickety-split from there.
Well, and also they actually had to grow up. I mean, I don't...
Well, that's part of the
it's
process.
It's really difficult to consider a kid whose parents rent a U-Haul to take them to college, and then they drive back every weekend.
I know a lot of, during the summer breaks
and everything, they go back home. It's like you're not really on your own. There's school officers, you know, if somebody in your dorm gets drunk, then everybody, you know, you can't, there's a lot of freedoms that they don't have.
Or flip cars during the pumpkin fest.
And go to jail for it. And, you know, if you fail your classes and fail out of school because you were in jail for 3 weeks and failed your finals, well, too bad. You know, they can't get a job until they're 18. For anything in Keene that would actually get you any hours, you can't do it if you're in high school.
Well, we'll see what happens.
I don't know. Maybe not. I don't think I'm going to see what happens.
Something else in the news this week. Actually, it's been ongoing for a month now. Actually, it's been ongoing for quite some time, but it's really been talked about this last month because they've reached their deadline. And they need to cut some trees down. They were going to do it on Tuesday up over in the Edgewood neighborhood north of the airport. But the Edgewood residents filed injunction against the city of Keene over to tree cutting. This is also reported in the Sentinel. For years, residents of Keene-Edgewood neighborhood have raised concerns about the city's tree-cutting plans near Dillon Hopkins Airport. On Thursday, they took these concerns to court. A group of 10 Edgewood residents have filed a motion. Should it be have or has?
The group has. It's the subject is singular.
They have filed a motion in Cheshire County Superior Court seeking an immediate injunction against the proposed city forest management plan, which includes forest thinning and tree removal. And the way that they have said it, the amount of trees that they're talking about, it really, really, really does sound like clear cutting. The plaintiff's principal argument, a 1983 land use agreement the city is using to justify the tree removal, is invalid. Instead, they argue a prior covenant in the 1969 deed in which Edgewood residents gave the land to the city with restrictions on deforestation is the one that holds legal sway.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do what? Why would you take the property? Someone died.
Why would you give the city the property?
The city gets property and donations every month.
Don't do that.
Well, it's now tax-free probably, and then it gets to stay unforested. What's the word I'm looking for?
Until they decide, not deforested.
Plot of land. Until they decide to do it.
Somehow the land along Maple Avenue is not deforested because it was a gift to the city.
It's very, very thick pines. And by the way, much thicker than this piece of property. We went and looked at it on Saturday. And I don't know where these trees they're talking about are.
Yeah, it was really surprising to just drive by and be like, wait, it can't be these. These are trees, but they can't possibly be.
So here, I've brought up the Google Map image, and I'm going to scroll down a little bit. So here's the Dillon Hopkins Airport. You can see they've got the two runways, one going north-south, and this other one's gone kind of
easty-westy.
Easty-westy with a little bit of a north-south tilt. And I'm going to scroll in a little bit. And, of course, here's Edgewood up here at the top.
The neighborhood.
There's a little piece right down here. And The trees that are in the way that they're talking about being way too high is just this little portion right here. I do believe when they're talking about the was it 12 acres? They're not just this is like an acre and a half, 2 acres, maybe a little bit more. But they're talking about this entire swath, I believe.
Oh, really?
Really? That's
a lot more than.
Why would you need to cut all of that when the only area that is of concern is the runway takeoff area right here?
What if he's swerving around and needs to turn around low?
I
probably will never fly a plane after saying that, but. I don't really know.
When we drove through, we talked to a couple.
You talked to a couple, yes.
We were on a walk. It was good. It was a good 10-minute conversation, and they are of the opinion that this is a land grab.
Yeah.
Once the trees are cut, it'll be much easier to extend the airport. But I mean, I guess if it's been deeded to the city and they're not, first of all, they can't deforest it. That's part of the deed.
Except
they're going to do it anyways because FAA says the trees are too high. So now they're going to go and cut like, is it 2,000 trees? Let me bring this back up. 34 acres total. Yes, that would have to include all of that.
2,000 trees.
2,000 trees. So I guess that's not that much out of that whole area. But we did go stand out in the parking lot, and all right. So the trees that I was talking about that were north of the runway, little tiny little things. I mean, they weren't more than 40 foot little saplings.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't pick them up, but they for trees it didn't.
Now,
hey.
Now these trees that aren't in the way of the runway. Here's Shauna.
Get that out of there.
She's showing us.
Photoshop that out.
Shauna for scale here. Now that one. That one's probably getting close to 80 foot. But it's not, again, it's not in front of the runway. And of course, while we were talking to this couple, I think about three airplanes, little two-seaters, flew over. And I noticed them. I could hear them.
Mm-hmm.
They said they had gotten used to it already. But, yeah, look at this. Here's this guy taking off. And, I mean, it's got to be 3 times higher than the tallest tree right there. And this isn't even the trees that should be cut down because the runway's over here. It's way up there. I don't know what's going on. Here's another question, too. And here's more scale right here. Let me bring that Google map back up. My big question is, if these trees are the big issue, why are they going north on the runway? Why don't they just go south? And look at all this. Look at all that clearance.
And turn around?
And the only thing they have to go over is the sand pit here. No, not turn around. Just go south.
Well, where are they going when they go north?
Every plane that we saw when we were there for the half hour we were there were going north on this runway and going over Edgewood.
And then how do they... What if they're not going south? They're traveling up to, say, Lebanon, West Lebanon.
I guess you can just turn around real quick. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, of course, then that would mean that all the planes are landing from north to south. Do they need more clearance? And the trees are a big deal. I don't know. It just seems odd to me that you have all of this good space right here of just cleared land. And the big deal is over these trees that do provide a sound barrier.
Yeah, they do.
And now if they're talking about actually growing the airport, they're already trying to talk Swansea into introducing a TIF district at the airport so that they can...
Seriously?
Yeah, and it's probably going to happen too. Swansea, don't do it.
Of course it's going to happen.
Don't do it. We can't get rid of our TIF districts. Our TIF district slush funds. We can't get rid of them.
No, they will present it as magical money comes to you through no taxation of your own.
It's not magical money. Nothing in life is free. That money is going to come. It's indirectly coming from the taxpayers.
That's hilarious.
If you really want to help the airport, get the government out of it completely and privatize that bad boy and let private operations run those affairs down there. I agree that more hangars, for overnight hangars, for the corporate jets that are coming in, I think it's a great idea. Get a private.
Well, if those corporations want to pay for it, then they can foot the money.
Well, CNS is already there taking care of its own.
Then why? Then...
Why is it a deal? Because the city wants to have, they want to be a part of it, and they want to turn this into a revenue maker. Right now, it's not making any money, but they want to turn it into a revenue maker because they can't figure out any way to do it except taxing us.
Yeah.
Government. What else? Government will never be as efficient as the free market. Until people figure that out, this is going to be a problem. We're going to be stuck with this stupid airport forever and ever. Amen. Let it go.
Well, how would a corporation, a private company owning the airport, solve the problem?
If money is involved and they have to pay their employees and make a profit, they'll make decisions that will benefit the company. They'll make it happen. And if they
and
don't,
so does the city government.
And if they don't,
they make decisions that benefit city government.
And if they fail,
how would privatizing or no? Not going to say the act of privatizing, because then that assumes you're going from government-owned to private. I mean, just it being like you go to the other planet where everything is freedom and the planet where this is privatized. How would the problems that the residents have be solved or not existent? What I think people are more interested in when... You have the Liberty answer of how would that solve this actual problem?
Liberty answer is the way they did this property. They put a property deed on it, a covenant, saying you cannot cut these trees unless you legally change the covenant. And that would require the entire neighborhood of Edgewood to sign off saying, yes, we agree that these trees are allowed to be cut. And it would have to go to court, and sometimes some property deeds are easier to get out than others.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Liberty answer right there. If this airport was run privately, they would have to take this issue to court and win before those trees got cut. Otherwise, guess what? They can't do anything about it.
Sounds like that's what the residents are doing right now. They're taking it to court.
Yeah, exactly. But the city is having it. The city's just running this through. The city is ramming this through because they're government and they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have more sway and these residents, they're having to hire a lawyer. They're having to go out of their way to make this happen, to fight this battle. The city's got a lawyer.
Oh, yeah, they do. On standby. Like a big company would.
Here's my solution. Figure out an alternative. You've got all that land south of the airport.
Yeah.
Extend the airport or the runway back down south.
Or, you know, build some type of wall or some sort of compensation to the residents. Actually listen to them to be able to not have trees but still have a barrier so that they could sell their home.
Okay, well, if
they ever wanted to.
Yeah, well, one of the arguments was living...
The standard of living is not destroyed.
Yeah, living next to woods is nice. And studies have proven that it actually increases your livelihood and your lifetime.
But woods right next to an airport
air,
is not the same as
nature.
Woods.
Yeah, that's part of the argument. It's not just a sound issue. And it has been brought up that, yes, they're looking for grants, FAA grants, to actually construct some kind of wall. I don't know.
Government-funded walls are usually pretty hideous. Just... In my experience,
actually, you know, with the big wall issue in the national news right now, and they're talking about putting a wall up to protect these residents from the airport. Trust me, they're not going to be able. If we're talking about some of these trees are getting near 100 feet, that's quite a sound barrier. They're not going to be able to construct a wall that's going to prevent this noise.
Well, perhaps not a wall. Perhaps some other
a net, a bubble.
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of dumb about this, but other form of noise reduction. I mean, give them a coupon for, insulation for their house. I don't know. And I do agree that if it were a private company that had to deal with these residents, it'd be a lot less. I mean, the people that you spoke to yesterday who were speaking with you sounded very...
They sounded at a loss. They're like, we can't, we went and
not
spoke.
Not out of loss, but already defeated.
Yeah, they said that.
Like, they already know that it's already a done deal.
They say they go to these meetings, they speak from the heart, and it's like everything they said was just went in one ear and out the other. They don't listen to us, and they go ahead and decide. They've already decided. They don't really care. And yeah, they did sound a little defeated, like they were tired of going to these events. This couple actually went to one of the school meetings a couple of years ago. Might have been last year. Same thing. They got the exact same message that it doesn't really matter. There's not enough of them. Actually, there are. And by the way, talking to the public, there are enough of us. If you wanted to get the school budget down, it's going up a million, by the way. It's going up a million this year. If you really want to get it down because you think that it's unsustainable, there are enough of us to stop it. Stop it in its tracks. Except... they go to these meetings, one and two, and they kind of trickle in there one at a time, and it goes in one ear and out the other, and they walk away defeated. And then they end up moving to Chesterfield or Westmoreland.
Because it's an atomized community against a whole industrial complex.
It's hard going up against the man. The man is always going to be stronger and is going to have... They do this for a living. They got people on standby, like the lawyer. They got clerks that are, you know, running the numbers.
Which also adds to the point, you know, it's not like the people in government, the city government, it's not like they're making pizzas all day. Mm-hmm. They could think of a way, they could Google, you know, how to soundproof a set of homes or something.
Trust me, it's not, they cannot.
They could figure something out other than what they're doing right now, which sounds like just ramming it in.
Yeah, well, they can't duplicate these trees. There's no way they can build a wall like that. Well, hey, and by the way, I am not against the airport. So I have talked to residents of this area who are kind of against it, even though the airport's been there since, like, the 40s.
Well, now there's an Indian restaurant there, I'm kind of against it.
But now they're talking
too.
About getting more corporations involved,
That's
getting more jets
stuff.
Here, actually storing jets overnight and stuff. I'm not against the airport. I don't know that I would want to live over there.
That Edgewood.
I'm against the city of Keene and Swansea running this establishment. That's what I'm against.
Edgewood community looks like a magical land, separate from
the rest of the area. It's very
separate
nice.
From. It's not Keene. It's not Swansea. It's like you are on another planet. It looks really nice.
It's a nice neighborhood. And if you didn't see the little two seaters going over every now and then, you wouldn't even know there was an airport there. Very, very nice community. I hope it doesn't get wrecked. Yeah. Speaking of school stuff, some of you might have heard of the Claremont decision. It's actually five court cases that have gone, have taken place since 93. And they use this. This has been used as precedent for the constitutionality of the state of New Hampshire providing adequate public education. And I've never really looked into it. I've just heard it. I heard it on the radio all the time. Yeah, the Claremont decision. You know, you gotta provide adequate aid, reasonable adequate aid to the folks, to the kids. And I've just never really looked into it. I finally got around to actually reading the Article 83 of the New Hampshire Constitution.
Is that the one that says to actually see
what the wording is and how they have defined, where they came up with this idea that New Hampshire, state of New Hampshire, will, by necessity, are mandated to provide this government education. And I can't find it, Shauna. It's not in there.
You know, my guess when you are not reading this whole Article 83 aloud, it is so long.
No. I'm going to read some choice.
Okay.
I just want to take a snapshot of it. So here, I'm going to change the channel over. There you go. Okay. So here are the, and this is according to the, this is the, from the 97 Claremont case. This is how they are
This led to the 97 Claremont case. This is a state constitution.
Correct. This is, we're looking at state constitution, Article 83, encouragement of literature, etc. In 93, they actually defined a couple of words in here, cherish and encourage, to mean mandate. And in 97, when the decision was actually made, they were using that court precedent, that those definitions, to make the decision. So, here it is. Okay, it says, and it's long, I'll put it in the show notes if you actually want to peruse this. It is an interesting read. It shall be the duty of the legislators and magistrates in all future periods of this government to cherish the interest of literature and the sciences, and all seminars and public schools to encourage private and public institutions, and blah, 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 talks about how they love education. They admit education is a good thing. It makes good people. We don't want drunkards walking around. We want people who can read and who can write and who know their math. So we as legislators, it is our duty as legislators and magistrates to cherish education and to encourage public and private schools. And so they have taken the word cherish and they have defined it as mandated.
Well,
now they did this according, they went back and they looked at the text. They look at what was actually going on. By the way, this article comes from 1784.
And it's basically a copy paste from Mass.
And it, and yes, which was like 4 years. It was a half decade before New Hampshire came up with their constitution. And yeah, it makes sense too. I mean, because we're, you know, very, very close in the neighboring state. I'll put the Claremont 93 and 97 court decisions in the show notes. They are very long. I think the 93 version was very neat because they went back and they were looking at what the governors were saying back in 1790. That we should cherish this and whatnot. And by the way, New Hampshire, and by the way, the state never paid public education for like the first 50 years. And the first time they actually put money into the public schools was when they allocated some land or something for a school. I think it was, but I don't know when the state actually started forking out state monies on a regular basis. It's really a new thing. Right now, Keene, and I believe that this is an equal division amongst all communities across New Hampshire. They're getting $4,450 per student. So that equates to about $11 million for Keene.
Wow.
Now that's just the tuition.
Are they hiring?
That's just the tuition part. There's also a state aid part, which is like another $11 million. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to the formula they're using, and that's above my pay grade at the moment. I first couldn't find them, and I think that I don't know if I'd be able to wrap my mind around them because every community is different. It's according to the tax rate and according to the Claremont decision was really based on the fact that there were five communities, districts in the Claremont area who were property poor, and they could not pay to keep their schools up. So there was this argument that, well, the state isn't spending enough money on the poor districts. And so look at this court precedent right here that says that it's the duty of the state to provide this money.
Of the legislators and magistrates. Well, maybe magistrate referred back down to county because there is a difference between the state government and local king government.
Well, I don't support the county government either.
That's
one that needs to go away. Keep it city, town, state.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where, especially looking back at 220 some odd years later of, you know, what is reality? Those are my options is reality. I don't have the option of, you know, how do I want it to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the state pays for it. And the concept of the state not paying for it is an unthought. You cannot consider it as an option.
It's become an entitlement.
So reading
and people,
it back.
People can't wrap their mind around the fact that they're not going to get that money at the end of the year to supplement their already excruciatingly large budget.
Yes. So reading this today on Planet Now, you know, you're always, I'm always going to read into it of like, you know, well, what does this have to do with today? How did they get to hear from what was back there? And yeah, it says it shall be the duty to do all this stuff to cherish. And that obviously was taken to mean mandate as decided, you know, 100 some odd years later.
No. It was decided in 97 that that cherish meant mandate.
100 some odd years late.
200 years.
200 years after 1784.
More than 200.
Some odd. Okay, 209.73. Advertising. Yeah, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, I mean, it shall be the duty to cherish that they took to be, to encourage, to inculcate and countenance. Those are all, they could have taken anything out of here and said, okay, well, that means you have, the state has to do it. Interestingly enough, the next sentence afterwards, provided nevertheless that no money raised by taxation shall ever be granted or applied for the use of schools of institutions of any religious sect or denomination, is the sentence that was amended. And it appears to me that that was added in 1877, says at the bottom, prohibiting tax money from being applied to schools of religious denominations. Mm-hmm. That to me immediately thinks, oh, 1877, they suddenly woke up and realized they don't want money going to religious schools because of Catholics.
It was the
Catholic popish scare, yet in the first, in what's still highlighted here, to cherish the interest of literature and the sciences in all seminaries. What do you think a seminary is?
Uh-oh.
Oh. So.
Yeah, but seminaries can be.
Yeah, I mean, I took seminar.
It's not just religious stuff.
So.
But yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I had totally forgotten about that. We were talking about some school voucher stuff, either last week or the week before. And one of the state reps, one of his main arguments was the reason you can't have the voucher system, which is public money going to basically private institutions or charter, well, you know, which are kind of public. But some of these institutions are religious in nature. And you cannot send public money to a religious institution. And we were thinking federal regulations, laws, where in fact... Here you go. It is actually in the New Hampshire Constitution, specifically saying that no money can be sent that way. And that's the only time money is mentioned in part one of this article. You can't send it to religious institutions. And you said it's probably the there's dirty Catholics, huh?
No, if I could be Catholic, I would. But as, you know, second best. Yeah, that's just my guess of what they were worried about in the 1870s. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I have nothing to try now. So this is the 93 one that you're moving on to? Oh, or is this the 97?
97 actually determined that the, according to... that language. I'll read from, this is 93. This is 97. So the judge is talking. I read Article 83 to have two parts. The cherish, let me change this, change it. There we go. The cherish part and the encourage part. We have held that cherish is a mandate to support. Encourage does not contain the same mandate. The same dictionary that drove our interpretation of cherish, and I could not find this interpretation definition of cherish anywhere, defines encourage as to animate, to incite to anything, to give courage to support the spirits, to embolden, to raise confidence, to make confident.
Yeah, that's the definition of encourage.
Mm-hmm.
that they went through.
She did not, he did not, whoever this judge is, did not...
list the dictionary definition of
cherish. Because it was, I guess it was already defined in the 93 court case. And I couldn't find it. I read the whole, I read 93 court case all the way through.
And you couldn't find anything about cherish?
Uh-uh.
Well, it,
Hold on, are you still reading?
Okay. I was trying.
Okay, go ahead.
He does make the point that by the definition of, he says this is not a duty on the encourager, mm-hmm. but the charge is to have a positive effect on the person that's to be encouraged. So that's how he gets.
And I guess that requires money.
Well, it doesn't really help if you're just like, go on now. Go on, do it.
Go on, do it. Get her done.
I mean, and also cherish is in, I don't know what wedding vows were back in the 1780s, but they're commonly in common wedding vows now.
Mm-hmm.
And as a sacrament, and from what I understand, words in a sacrament are not just flippant words. So I can't imagine that cherish does have a lot of gravitas behind it.
Yeah, let me see if I brought up the 93 court case, and I'm going to do a little search here and see what I can't find.
Just as a quote.
Yeah, this is the.
Is there any more?
There's a whole bunch of them. There's 13 of them.
Okay, let's see. I can go and read quickly. Yep, that's as a definition, or that's as a quote.
Okay, so here's one of the definitions: to support, to shelter, to nurse up.
There you go. Nurse up, shelter, support, duty to pay for. There you go. There's a mandate.
The breadth right of the breadth of the meaning of the term, of these terms, duty to cherish, together with the articulated ends for which this duty to cherish is established, strongly support that the duty to cherish the public schools encompasses the duty to provide an education to the people of the state. It is reasonable, therefore, to understand the duty to cherish public schools as a duty to ensure that public schools achieve their objective and educate the people. I don't see it. I see it as a...
You just said it out loud.
I said it out loud, and I don't agree. I think the cherish, I don't, here's a prime example. Sean, I cherish you and I cherish my daughter. And I'm not going to break the bank on her. When it comes time for birthday, I mean, she's not getting a pony from me.
Yeah.
I cherish Sasha, but I'm not Sasha.
Really? What's her name then?
But I'm not going to break the bank on her and buy her a pony. She's going to get a $20 Starbucks coupon from me or something.
Okay.
And I cherish you, but I'm not going to buy you a car. I know you want one, but you're not getting a car from me.
Okay. Let's make this even more embarrassing than it already has been.
So I guess it really comes down to how you define it, and everyone's going to come up with their own solution. All I'm saying is this Constitution doesn't say how much money. It doesn't say what kind of education. It just says... It just says literature and the sciences, and agriculture is in there, and the act of being a merchant, and stay sober. By the way, sobriety is an important part of that reg, but it doesn't say how much, and doesn't say who gets to define what and what. Right now, the judicial system is deciding that this is a thing. When this is for the legislator to decide. They don't want to, and of course, they don't want to spend any money on it because they're, you know, a bunch of right wing nuts who hate public education.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what I said a few minutes before, that cherish is not a flippant word. It doesn't mean just simply give the object of your cherishment whatever they feel like they want.
Which is what is happening right now. Well, on a state level, the state funding is nowhere near the actual school district's funding they get from property taxes, but they're still getting it's about a quarter. It's a big portion.
Okay. Well, that's different from what this says, I guess. I mean, I don't...
What does it say? What does it say to you?
What I'm reading, and I'm not saying I agree that, therefore, the New Hampshire Constitution, which I've been a part of, you know, only 7-8 years, so who am I to say? I'm not saying I agree with this setup. It sounds labyrinthine to try to make any sense of. If it were just simply government pays for schools, yay, everybody gets, you know, netbooks and no handwriting being taught, that would be easier for me to wrap my head around. I still wouldn't agree with it. But it says right there, we do not construe the terms shall be the duty to cherish as merely a statement of aspiration. So there's weight held to that word that is a little deeper than you saying, well, I'm not going to buy my daughter a pony. I'm not going to buy my girlfriend a car just because I like them.
Not yet.
When I'm
rich.
But there's more to it, you know? I mean, cherish is in common wedding vows in popular culture, taken from just what I've heard. Also, it has in there, you know, to love. Okay, that one, everyone gets that, whatever, supposedly. And to obey. That doesn't mean, you know, just simply do the laundry every week, like he says, or bring him a cold beer every evening, like
he says.
Great.
Yeah, I wish.
It's kind of a simple word that has a lot of weight around it, behind it. You know, there's a lot of history to it. And I think that's the same thing with to cherish, that there is more to it than that. And they say right here in what you just read, and then you said you just read it out loud.
I don't agree. I understand what they're saying. I don't agree with it.
Oh, well, then never mind. You understand it. I was trying to explain it to you, and you said you'd...
I thought you were trying to sway me.
I don't agree with it either.
Okay, well, why are you... Okay, you're just playing devils. Good job.
No, man.
Good job. We do have to take off. Visit our website, citizenkane.org. All the previous videos are there. I think we're up to 20. This is 23, so you got 22 that are there right now.
There's a lot behind it.
I also will link all of the articles we just discussed, including these court precedents. I'll link them right there on the video so you can peruse them at your leisure. Call that number anytime during the week, 267-521-2771, and leave a message if you would like, or if you would like to contact me directly, more professionally. The email address is show@citizenkane.org. And Shonda, did you want an email address? Were we talking about that? And you decided, did you change your mind?
Yeah, give me an email address.
I'm going to get Shonda an email address, and I'll have that ready next week. It's probably going to be something, I don't know. She has very cryptic names.
It'll be easy for people to remember and
it
read.
It should be Shonda.
No, people can't spell that.
What about Nash?
Nope.
Okay, well, we'll figure something out for you guys, and that'll be ready
for
you.
It should be cherish@citizenkane.org, because there's more meaning behind the word cherish than there is in my first name and definitely in my last name. So,
good catch.
cherish@citizenkane.org.
All right, we'll make it happen. Guys, thank you so much for watching, and we are going to see you again next week at the same time. Good night. Okay, we actually almost ran out of show stuff.
Well, good thing I got the impression that you didn't understand.
Oh, I forgot to talk about council positions open. Guys, if you're still watching...
Vote for Conan.
Yeah, you can't. But, and of course, anyone who's watching the show already knows. But yeah, the council position was open this week. And it'll be closed
by the end of this week.
On
it'll be filled
the 31st,
Wednesday, Tuesday.
There's going to be contacted from one of the Sentinel reporters. They're going to be contacting all eight. So far, it's up to eight people. Holy crap. We'll see how that works. There's going to be a lot of...
So wait, what's happening on Tuesday?
Monday or Tuesday, I'm going to get a call from a Sentinel reporter. They're going to ask a couple questions and see what my statement of candidacy is, you know, what my claim to fame is. I'm working on some delivery, my 5-minute spiel on next Thursday. I'm working on that right now. And I'm trying to do it in such a way that I don't come off as a complete lunatic, that I actually have solutions, and I don't want to just clear-cut the entire system. I do, but, you know, I have solutions for what to do when that clear-cutting takes place. Actually, clear-cutting is the wrong word. No, don't quote me on that one.
Are you going to go there to just... deliver judgment upon them?
No, I'm gonna offer solutions.
You have solutions
them. That's what people want.
That's what you can bring to them.
The problem is that's not solutions that they want, because they don't believe that. First of all, they don't believe that private enterprise is capable of providing the content that people have become used to
over
the years.
But you believe in the solutions that you're bringing, so you maybe should focus on...
I have to believe in them, because guess what?
Okay, well, to the rest of my point, you have good solutions that will work to bring to them that can be worked out with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Okay,
But here's the thing, though. It has to happen. My solutions have to happen, because... the alternative is to keep going down the spiral, and pensions, government employee pensions and retirement, and spending on reckless spending on projects that, on our inheritance, by the way, that we are going to be paying for. Whereas all these baby boomers are going to retire and start collecting their Social Security.
Yeah, they got a good life.
And we're going to have to pick up the tab. We're going to have to pick up their investments that they've made on our behalf, and we're going to have to take care of them to boot.
Right.
It's going to be a hard damn life, man.
It was going to anyways.
Well, I want to start making the solution. I want to start coming up with solutions now, not in 20 years when every single one of them are retired and collecting. I want to start figuring this out now. I'm going to put my damn foot down. I won't flip the table over. I'll leave it standing, but I'll just put my foot down. And not on the table either, on the ground.
Well, it's... I guess I kind of see it sort of...
The
Ron Paul equation.
What's that? He gets elected every year. Or he was. Is he still running?
He's retired.
He's totally private now.
He's
still working, yet he still works. He's every week he's doing his podcast. But he got elected every year.
I think he's being abused by his children and grandchildren, actually. But, you know, whatever. No, the Ron Paul option in 2008, we could have gone the easy route of dealing with the hard questions in 2008 and the hard issues of the economy, government control of the economy, effing everything up, college bubble, debt, foreign wars, the problems from illegal immigration, and then not actually worrying so much about immigration itself. Could have kept it focused on the illegal and the problems that come from that, not the people themselves, just the one subset thereof. And it would have been nice and a lot easier. It would have been hard because life is hard, but it would have been a lot easier because it would have gotten rid of 10 years of the same problems festering and just getting worse. Because Ron Paul seems like a very nice old man. Instead, we got what we got now. And I'm fine with it. And a lot of normies are fine with it. But it's a lot worse then, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, you Bernie babies, boo-hoo. I'm more complaining about, like, the Republican establishment and the conservative, cuck-servative establishment who totally ripped off Ron Paul in 08 and in 2012. They could have...
fixed it?
No, they could have propped up Ron Paul like they propped up Crazy McCain and Romney in 2012. Because nobody... and like they tried to prop up Jebby in
last year. In 8 and 12, they just proved their true colors, that they really aren't conservative. They're just authoritarian. We want power, our way power. And we really don't, you know, we really don't agree with a lot of the stuff that we're saying. As long as we're in control, and that's what we're after. That's where we're, there goes the heater.
No, there does not go to the heater.
All right, well, it's getting cold in here, guys. We got to take off. Shauna is freezing, and she's going to let me have it. We're forcing her to be a part of this cold, cold ice box. I love it. I'm out. Take care, guys. We'll see you.